Get up, boy. It's time to kill.
Kyla was awake instantly. He was 14 years old, and the training had sunk in enough that he went through his survival checklist instantly. For each question, there was only a terse answer. Each sensation got only the briefest moment of his attention. What woke you?
Voice.
What do you see?
Darkness, dust, afternoon light, shack.
What do you smell?
Blint, sewage, the plith.
What do you feel?
Warm blanket, fresh straw, my bed, no warning tingles.
Can you move?
Yes.
Where are you?
Safe house.
Is there danger? The last question, of course, was the culmination. He could move. His weapons were in their sheaths.
All is well.
That wasn't guaranteed. Not even here in this dingy safe house in the shadow of one of the few sections of the ancient aqueduct that was still standing. More than once, Durzo had tied a sword to the ceiling over Kyla's bed, and the damn thing was nearly invisible when you had to look at it point first. Durzo had woken Kyla, and when he didn't recognize the danger within 3 seconds, Durzo had cut the rope. Fortunately, he'd capped the point that first time, and the second time. The third time, he didn't. Another time, Durzo had had Scarred Rabble, only Durzo called him Ben, wake Kyler. Scarred Rabble had even worn Durzo's clothes and mimicked his voice perfectly. That was part of Scarred Rabble's talent. That time, Kyler hadn't been caught. Even a garlicky meal didn't give a man the same smell as chewing the cloves straight. Decoding Durzo's words came last.
Time to kill. You think I'm ready?
You were ready a year ago. I just needed the right job for your first solo.
What is it? I was ready a year ago?
Blint's compliments came like that, when they came at all. And usually, even a grudging compliment would be followed by some criticism.
It's at the castle, and it's got to be finished today. Your debtor is 26 years old. No military training, shouldn't be armed. But he's well-liked, a busy little bee. Very busy. An assassin would incur ancillary fatalities.
Blint said assassin with a sneer, as would any wet boy.
But it doesn't matter for the contract. The debtor just has to die. Just finish the job.
Kyler's heart pounded. So this was how it was going to be. This wasn't a simple test. It wasn't, can Kyler kill solo? It was, can Kyler do what a wet boy does? Can Kyler decide a suitable entry strategy to the castle itself, no less? Can he kill solo? Can he do it without killing innocents? Can he get out after the hit? Oh, and can he use his talent, the true measure of what separates a wet boy from a common assassin?
How the hell does Blint come up with these things?
The man had a brilliance for ferreting out and exploiting Kyler's weaknesses, especially his biggest weakness of all. Kyler hadn't been able to use his talent. Not yet. Not even once.
It should have quickened by now.
Blint was forever pushing Kyler in new ways, hoping that some new extreme of stress, of need, might bring it out of him. Nothing had worked yet. Durzo had wondered aloud if he should just kill Kyler. Instead, he'd decided that as long as Kyler could do everything a wet boy could do, Durzo would keep training him. He promised that it would ultimately fail.
It is impossible. A wet boy isn't a wet boy without the talent.
Who took out the contract?
The Shinga.
You're trusting me with that?
You're going in this afternoon. If you fuck it up, I go in tonight, and I bring the Shinga 2 heads.
Kyler didn't have to ask who the other head would belong to.
What did the debtor do?
You don't need to know.
Does it matter?
No, it doesn't. Name's Devon Corgi. And let's just say that when most people try to turn away from the darkness, they want to take a few bags packed with goodies with them. It slows them down. They never make it. I've only known one man in all my life who was willing to pay the full price of leaving the Sakage.
Who was it?
Boy, in 2 hours you've got a date with a debtor. You've got better questions to ask.
Devon Corgi.
The guard furrowed his brow.
Nah, don't know him. Hey, Gamble, you know a Devon Corgi?
The guard spoke to another guard walking through the castle's enormous west gate. It was almost too easy. Kyler had long ago stolen the tunic and bag that was the uniform of the city's most widely used courier service. People who didn't have their own servants employed boys, Eastside boys, never guild rats, to take their messages. Whenever guards had looked like they might ask questions, Kylo walked up to them and asked for directions.
Don't they know? Can't they see?
These men were guards. They were supposed to be protecting Devin Corgi and everyone else in here. And they were going to direct a killer right to him.
How can they be so dumb?
It was an uneasy feeling of power. It was gratifying that all the hours with Blint were definitely doing something. Kylo was becoming dangerous. And yet, how could they not see what he was?
Sure, he's the one came in this week with his eye twitching, jumping at shadows. I think he's up in the North Tower. If you want me to take your message, I could. I'm on duty in 10 minutes. It's the first stop on my rounds.
No thanks. I'm open for a good tip. Which way is it?
As the guard gave Kylo directions, he tried to formulate his plan. The kill itself wouldn't be hard. A kid could get much closer than a grown-up before he roused suspicion, and then it would be too late. The hard part was finding the man. Devin didn't just have an office somewhere. He moved around. That added all sorts of risk, especially because Kylo needed to get the kill done today. The North Tower sounded good, isolated. The guard coming sounded bad. Kylo had just talked to the man and told him who he was looking for. With the makeup Blint had used on him, Kylo looked totally different and younger by years. But it was best to let every death be a mystery.
A wet boy leaves corpses, not evidence.
So Kylo would find Corgi and hide until the guard came and left. Then he'd kill him.
In and out, no problem. Even without the talent.
The castle was awe-inspiring. Though Blint always spoke of it with scorn, it was the most magnificent building Kylo had ever seen. It was the same black granite as the old aqueducts in the Warrens, quarried in the mountains on the Karen border. The entire quarry industry was owned by the Sakage, so now only the wealthy could afford to build with stone. It was one of the reasons most of the aqueduct pillars were gone now. The non-Sakage poor in the Warrens scavenged the rock for their own use, or their own black market sale to the middle class. The castle had been built 400 years ago when, for the 30 years of King Abinazeh's rule, Sanaria was a major power. He had barely finished the castle when he decided to push further east and take the Chantry, and several thousand Magi had ended his ambition permanently. The castle had first been constructed on the Mott and Bailey design at least 100 years earlier. Surrounded by the natural moat of the Plith River, Boss Island had been built up into a larger hill, on top of which sat the fortress. What was now the north side of the Warrens had been the original Bailey. The Warrens were on a narrow peninsula that dropped off sharply into the sea, except for the last half mile, which flattened out before the shoreline. The design was so defensible that neither the wood fortress nor the wood-walled Warrens had ever been taken. But the city had expanded along with King Abinazeh's pride, so Castle Sanario had been built of stone, and the city jumped to the east shore of the cliff. The aqueducts, however, were a mystery. They had been there long before King Abinazeh, and seemed to serve no purpose, as the cliff was freshwater, if not terribly clean. Leaving the diamond-shaped castle yard, Kylo walked up stone stairs that had been climbed by so many feet over the centuries that the middle of each step dipped several inches lower than the sides. The guards ignored him, and he assumed the attitude of a servant. It was one of his most frequent guises. Blint liked to say that a good disguise cloaked a wet boy better than the shadows. Kylo could walk right past almost anyone he knew, with the exception of Count Drake. Not much escaped him. Soon he passed through most of the buzz of activity that filled the inner yard and the great hall. He went past the lines of people waiting for an audience in the throne room, past the open doors of the gardens, and made his way to the North Tower. The halls were busy everywhere until he stepped into the North Tower's antechamber. Devin Corgi wasn't there. For the first time, taking pains to be silent, Kyler opened the door that led to the stairs and climbed them quietly. The stairway was blank. Nothing decorative, no niches, no statues, no ornamental curtains, or anything that would afford Kylo a place to hide. He made his way to the top of the tower. It was, it seemed, just a large bedchamber, currently not being used. A young man balancing a large ledger book was going through the drawers of a bureau. apparently taking an inventory of the neatly folded sheets for the enormous feather bed and the alternate curtains for the large shuttered window. Kyla waited. Devon was turned sideways to the door, and without the talent to shadow Kyla's approach, there was a good chance the man would see him enter. The waiting was always the worst. Keyed up with no place to go, Kyla began to entertain fantasies that the guard was going to come up the stairs at any minute. Seeing him here, this late, he'd search him. Searching him, he'd find the slit in Kyla's trousers. Finding that hand-sized slit, he'd find the long knife strapped to Kyla's inner thigh. But there was nothing for it. Kyla waited just out of sight, listening, willing his ears to hear even the scritch of the quill on the ledger. Finally, he checked and saw Devon disappearing into the closet on the far side of the nearly circular chamber. Kyla crept into the chamber and looked for a place to hide. Master Blint had taught Kyla how to boil the sap of the rubber tree to make a shoe sole that was soft and silent. It was expensive to import and only a little quieter than properly worked leather, but to Master Blint, even the smallest margin mattered. It was why he was the best. There were no good places to hide. A great place to hide was one where Kyler would be able to see the entire room, keep his weapons at ready, and be able to move quickly, either to strike or to escape. A good place to hide gave a decent view and the ability to strike or escape with only a little difficulty. This room had no dark corners. It was practically a circle. There were rice paper screens, but they'd been folded and were leaning against the wall. Pitifully, the only place to hide was under the bed. If Kyla were a wet boy, perhaps he could have vaulted up a wall and dangled off the chains of the chandelier. But that wasn't an option.
Under the bed? Master Blint will never let me live this down.
But there was no other option. Kyla dropped flat onto his toes and fingertips and crawled under the bed. It was good he was still slight, because there wasn't much space. Kyler had chosen the side of the bed with a view of the closet, and that meant that he didn't have a view of the stairs. But from the sound of the footsteps, he became certain that it wasn't a guard. Devon stepped out of the closet holding a chest, and guilt flashed across his face.
You can't be here, Bev.
Oh, you're leaving?
No.
You stole from them, and now you're stealing from the king, and for some reason I'm surprised you'd lie to me. You asshole.
Devon stepped close to the bed, putting the chest down on it. His legs just inches away from Kyla.
Bev, I'm sorry. Bev, please.
Go down.
Wish granted.
It was the blackest kind of humor. Durzo's kind of humor. He liked to say that the irony of overheard conversations was one of the best perks of the bitter business, though he said that the wisdom of last words was highly overrated.
Wish granted? Really? Really?
Kyla didn't like that he'd even thought that. Everything this man had planned was about to end, and Kyler was smirking about it.
Damn, stupid girl. Where's that guard anyway? He was supposed to be here by now.
This was what it was like, Durzo had told Kyler.
You come in at the end of a drama, whether it's just started or has been going on for years, your arrival signals the end, and you rarely get to know what the story was about.
Who is Bev to Devon? His lover? Partner in crime? Just a friend? His sister?
Kyla didn't know. He'd never know.
Hello, Dev.
Oh, hello, Gamble.
That courier find you?
Courier?
Little shite must have got lost. Everything fine up here?
Sure, just fine.
See you around.
Here it is. The guard would be far enough away now that even if Devon managed to cry out, he wouldn't be heard. Devon stepped away from the bed toward the bureau, and Kyler crawled out from beneath the bed like a bug. He stood and drew the knife. Devon was mere paces away. Kyler's heart was pounding. He thought he could hear the rush of blood in his ears. Kyler did everything right. Low, steady stance, advancing quietly but not quickly, balanced so that if at any moment the debtor reacted, Kyler wouldn't be caught flat-footed. He brought the knife up to eye level, preparing to grab Devon and give him what Durzo called the red grin, a slash across the jugular and deep through the windpipe. Then he imagined Doll Girl, giving him the look she'd given him when he took the biggest piece of bread for himself.
What are you doing, Azoth? You know this is wrong.
Kyla was inches away from Devon, and Devon still hadn't heard him, but the very nearness panicked Kyla. He stabbed for Devon's neck and must have made some sound because Devon was turning. The knife bit into the back of Devon's neck, hit spine, and bounced out. Devon stepped back at the same time Kyla did. He put a hand to his neck, looked at his fingers, and saw the blood.
Please! Please, don't!
It seemed incredible. The man's eyes were big with fear, looking at little Kyler, whose disguise made him look even smaller and younger. There was nothing frightening about him, was there? But Devon looked like a man who's just seen his judgment come.
Please!
Why didn't you protect yourself? Why didn't you even try?
Devon was bigger than Kyler. He had a chance.
Why must you act like a sheep? A big, stupid human lad, too dumb to even move.
Not a drop of blood got on Kyler. He'd done it just like Durzo had taught.
Devon, I'm sorry. I just had to come back.
I didn't mean to.
Dev saw his face. She saw the dagger in his hand. She was a plain young woman wearing a white serving dress. Wide hips, wide-spaced eyes, mouth open in a little O, and beautiful raven hair.
Finish the job.
The training took hold. Kyle was across the room in an instant. He yanked the woman forward, swept a foot in, pivoted, and she flipped over onto the ground. Kyle was as inexorable as Dozo Blint. The woman was beneath him, face down on the carpet that covered this section of floor. He hesitated. It was his life against hers. She'd seen him. His disguise was good only as long as no one knew there was a 14-year-old murderer about. She'd seen his face. She had intruded on a debtor. She was just collateral damage.
It doesn't matter. Just finish the job. Life is empty. Life is meaningless. When we take a life, we aren't taking anything of value.
I believe it. I believe it.
There had to be another way. Could he tell her to run? To tell no one? To leave the country and never come back? Would she do it? No, of course not.
I told him what would happen if he stole from the Sakage. Bastard. With everything else he took from me, he didn't even have the decency to die alone. I was just coming up to apologize, and now you're going to kill me, aren't you?
Yes.
Kyla slid the knife between her ribs and pulled it sideways. Kyla's mind suddenly detached, pulling away from him as it had the day in the boat shop with Rat. He wiped the red blade on her white dress, sheathed it along his thigh, and checked himself in the room's mirror for blood, just like he'd been taught. It was all the sorrow in the world to him that he was clean. There wasn't any blood on his hands. When he turned, Blint stood in the open doorway, arms folded. Kyla just looked at him, still hovering somewhere between his own body, glad for the numbness.
Not great, but acceptable. The Shingo will be pleased.
Blint pursed his lips, seeing the distance in Kyla's eyes.
Life is meaningless. Life is empty. When we take a life, we take nothing of value.
Kyla stared at him blankly.
Repeat it, damn you!
Drizzo's hand moved and a knife blurred through the air, thunking into the bureau behind Kyla. He didn't even flinch.
Life is meaningless. Life is empty. When we take a life, we take nothing of value.
Kyla's fingers were a tingle, feeling again and again that easy slip of meat parting around the knife. Was it so easy? Was it so simple? You just pushed and death came? Nothing spiritual about it. Nothing happened. No one was whisked to Count Drake's heaven or hell. They just stopped. They stopped talking, stopped breathing, stopped moving, finally stopped twitching, stopped.
That pain you feel is the pain of abandoning a delusion. The delusion is meaning, Kyla. There is no higher purpose. There are no gods, no arbiters of right and wrong. I don't ask you to like reality. I only ask you to be strong enough to face it. There is nothing beyond this. There is only the perfection we attain by becoming weapons as strong and merciless as a sword. There is no essential good in living. Life is nothing in itself. It's a place marker that proves who's winning, and we are the winners. We are always the winners. There is nothing but the winning. Even winning means nothing. We win because it's an insult to lose. The ends don't justify the means. The means don't justify the ends. There is no one to justify to. There is no justification. There is no justice. Do you know how many people I've killed?
Kylo shook his head.
Me neither. I used to. I remembered the name of every person I killed outside of battle. Then it was too many. I just remembered the number. Then I remembered only the innocents. Then I forgot even that. Do you know what punishments I've endured for my crimes, my sins? None. I am proof of the absurdity of men's most treasured abstractions. A just universe wouldn't tolerate my existence.
Durzo took Kyler's hands.
On your knees.
Kyler knelt at the edge of a pool of the blood seeping from the woman's body.
This is your baptism.
Master Blint put both of Kyler's hands in the blood. It was warm.
This is your new religion. If you must worship, worship as the other wet boys do. Worship Nysos, god of blood, semen, and wine. At least those have power. Nysos is a lie like all the gods, but at least he won't make you weak. Today, you've become an assassin. Now get out and don't wash your hands. And one more thing. When you've got to kill an innocent, don't let them talk.
Kylo staggered through the streets like a drunk. Something was wrong with him. He should feel something, but instead there was only emptiness. It was like the blood on his hands had burst from some soul wound. The blood was drying now, getting sticky, the bright red fading to brown everywhere but inside his clenched fists. He hid his hands, hid the blood, hid himself and his mind, less numb than his heart. Knew that there was a point in this, too. He would be a wet boy, and he would always be hiding. Kyler himself was a mask, and identity assumed for convenience. That mask and every other would fit because before his training was done, every distinguishing feature of the Azoth who had been would be obliterated. Every mask would fit. Every mask would fool every inspector because there would be nothing underneath those masks. Kylo couldn't wear his courier disguise into the Warrens. Couriers never went to the Warrens. So he headed to an east side safe house on a block crowded with the tiny homes of artisans and those servants not housed at their lord's estates. He rounded a corner and ran straight into a girl. She would have gone sprawling if he hadn't grabbed her arms to catch her.
Sorry.
Kylo's eyes took in the simple servant's white dress, hair bound back, and a basket full of fresh herbs. Last, he saw the gory red smears he'd just left on each of her sleeves. Before he could disappear, start running down the street, before she saw how he'd stained her, the arcs and crosses of scars on her face clicked into place like the pieces of a puzzle. They were white now. Scars now. Where he had branded them into his mind as deep, red, inflamed cuts, burst tissue, dribbling blood, the rough scrape and muted gurgle of blood being swallowed, blood bursting in little bubbles around a destroyed nose. He only had time to see unmistakable scars and unmistakable big, brown eyes. Doll Girl looked down demurely, not recognizing this murderer as Azoth. The downward glance showed her the gore on her sleeves, and she looked up. Horror etched every feature not already etched with scars.
My God! You're bleeding! Are you all right?
Kylo was already running, sprinting heedlessly through the market. But no matter how fast he ran, he couldn't outrun the concern and the horror in those beautiful eyes. Those big brown eyes followed him. Somehow he knew they always would.
You ready to be a champion?
What are you talking about?
They'd finished the morning sparring, and Kyler had done better than usual. He didn't even think he'd be sore tomorrow. He was 16 years old now, and it seemed like the training was finally starting to pay off. Of course, he still hadn't won a single fight with Master Blint, but he was starting to have hope. On the other hand, Blint had been in a foul mood all week.
The king's tourney.
Kyler grabbed a rag and mopped his face. This safe house was small, and it got stiflingly hot. King Elaine Gunder IX had convinced the Blade Masters to certify a tourney in Cenaria. Of course, they might watch and decide that not even the winner was good enough to be a Blade Master, but on the other hand, they might decide that three or four contestants were. Even a first echelon Blade Master could find great work in any royal court in Mid-Kiru, but typically, Blint had sneered about the whole affair.
You said the king's tourney was for the desperate, the rich, and the foolish.
Mm-hmm.
But you want me to fight anyway.
Kylo guessed that made Master Blint desperate. Most children's talent quickened by their early teens. His still hadn't. And Blint was losing his patience.
The king's holding the tourney so he can hire the winners to be bodyguards. He wants to make sure he isn't hiring any wet boys. So this tourney has a special rule. No untalented allowed. There will be a Maja at the tourney to check all the contestants. A Chantry-trained healer. She's also there to ward the sword so the contestants don't kill each other and to heal anyone who gets hurt. The Nine have decided to flex their muscle. They want one of their own to win, to remind everyone who's who in this city. So it's a situation that fits you like a peg leg fits a cripple. Not that that's a coincidence. This tourney wouldn't even be happening if they hadn't suggested it. The Nine knows all about you and your little problem.
What?
Kyler hadn't even known they knew who he was. What if he lost?
Hugh Gibbet showed off his apprentice, Viridiana, to the Nine this week. A girl, Kyler. I watched her fight. She's talented, of course. She'd take you no problem.
Kyler felt a wave of shame. Hugh Gibbet was a murderer of the vilest sort. Hugh loved murder, loved cruelty for its own sake. Hugh never failed, but he also always killed more than just the target. Blint despised him. Kyler was making his master look second best to a butcher.
Wait, isn't the tourney today?
It was noon when Kyler arrived at the stadium on the north side of the Warrens. It had only been used for horse races for the last 12 years. Before that, it had been the home of the Death Games. As Kyler approached, he could hear the crowds within. The stadium could hold 15,000 people, and it sounded full. He walked in a cocky glide. It was meant not only to suggest an arrogant young swordsman, but also to disguise his own natural stride. Count Drake wouldn't attend an event that he saw as reminiscent of the Death Games, but Logan Geyer might, as would any number of the young nobles Kyler had to interact with on a fairly regular basis. Usually, Kyler felt no anxiety when he was disguised. First, he was good enough with disguises now that he didn't feel much danger. Second, anxiety drew attention like a lodestone. But now, his stomach was in an uproar because his disguise was no disguise at all. Master Blint had given him the clothes without comment. They were wet boy grays, as fine as anything Master Blint owned himself. These were the mottled gray and black that made a better camouflage in darkness than pure black did. The mottling breaking up the human shape. They were fitted perfectly, thin and tight on his limbs, but not impeding his movement. He suspected that the slender cut had another purpose. The Nine wanted him to look as young as possible. We sent an untalented child as our champion. He thrashed you. What happens when we send a wet boy? His clothes were completed with a black silk cloak. A black silk mask that left only holes for his eyes, a slit for his mouth, and a shock of his dark hair uncovered. He'd rubbed a paste into his hair to make it look utterly black and pulled it into short, disheveled points. In place of his black weapons harness, Blint had given him one of gold, with gold sheaths for each of his daggers, throwing knives, and sword. They stood out starkly against the drab wet boy grays. Blint had rolled his eyes as he gave it to Kyler.
If you've got to go for melodrama, you might as well do it right.
Like this is my fault.
Few people lingered on the streets, but when Kyra strode to the side entrance of the stadium, spectators and vendors gawked at him. He walked inside and found the fighter's chamber. There were over 200 men and a couple dozen women inside. They ranged from huge bashers Kyla recognized, to mercenaries and soldiers, to indolent young noblemen, to peasants from the Warrens who had no business holding a sword.
The desperate, the rich, and the foolish indeed.
He was noticed immediately.
Is that everyone?
A bookish woman came in from a side room. She almost bumped into the huge man who was walking in with her as he stopped abruptly. Kyla's breath caught. It was Logan. Logan wasn't going to watch. He was going to compete. Then the Maja saw Kyla. She covered her surprise better than most.
I see. Well, young man, come with me.
Acutely aware of maintaining his cocky glide, Kyla walked right past Logan and the others. The examination room had once been used to treat injured slave fighters. It had the feel of a room that had seen a lot of death. There were even gutters around at the base of each wall so blood could be washed away easily.
I'm Sister Drissa Nile. And though blademasters learn to use all edged weapons, for this tourney, you can only use your sword. I'm going to have to ask you to remove your other weapons.
Kyla gave her his best Durzo Blint stare.
I suppose I could bind them magically to their sheaths. You won't be able to draw them for perhaps 6 hours when the weaves dissipate.
Kyla nodded acquiescence. Sister Drissa quickly wrapped weaves around each of his sheaths. Kyla studied the brackets that had been posted on the wall. He found Logan quickly, then actually looked for a few moments for his own name.
Like the Nine entered me under my real name. What am I listed as?
Sister Drissa paused and pointed.
I am going to go out on a limb and guess that's you.
The name was listed as Kage.
Kage, the Shadow. If the Sakage didn't send you, young man, you'd better find yourself a fast horse.
Kyla was just glad to see that he was in the opposite bracket from Logan. His friend had grown into his height. Logan Geyer was no longer clumsy. He had a huge reach, and he was strong. But training for an hour every other day wasn't the same as training for hours every day under Master Blint's tutelage. Logan was a good fighter, but there was no way he'd make it to the top of his own bracket, which meant Kyla wouldn't have to face him. Kyla drew his sword, and Sister Nile warded it. He tested the edge, and it was not just flat, but blunted in a small circle around each edge, which showed she knew what she was doing. Even a practiced sword could cut if you sliced someone hard enough. At the same time, the weaves didn't appear to add any weight to the blade or to change how it traveled through the air.
Nice.
The rules of the tourney are the first swordsman to touch his opponent 3 times wins. I've bonded a ward to each fighter's body that makes opponent's swords react. The first time you touch your opponent, the sword will glow yellow. Second, orange. Third, red. And now, the last thing. Making sure you have no talent, I'll have to touch you for this.
I thought you could see.
I can, but I've heard rumors of people being able to disguise their talent, and I won't break my oath to make sure this fight is fair. Not even here. Not even for the Sakage.
Drissa put her hand on his hand.
Verum exquisite.
As Blint had explained it, women needed to speak to use their talent. But apparently, it didn't need to be comprehensible.
That's no disguise. I've never seen... Do they know? Oh, they must, I suppose, or they wouldn't have sent him, but...
What are you talking about?
You're broken.
Go to hell.
I'm sorry, I meant... People colloquially speak about having the talent as if it's simple, but it's not simple. There are 3 things that must all work together for a man or woman to become a mage. First, there's your Glora Virden, roughly your life magic. It's magic gleaned, perhaps, from your living processes, like we get energy from food, or maybe it's from your soul. We don't know, but it's internal. Half of all people have a Glora Virden. Maybe everyone, just in most it's too small to detect. Second, Some people have a conduit or a process that translates that power into magic or into action. It's usually very thin. Sometimes it's blocked. But say a man's brother has a loaded hay wagon fall on him. In that extremity, the man might tap his Glory Virden for the only time in his life and be able to lift the wagon. On the other hand, men who have a Glory Virden and a wide open conduit tend to be athletes or soldiers. They sometimes perform far better than the men around them, but then, like all others, it takes them time to recuperate. The amount of magic they can use is small and quickly exhausted. If you told them they were using magic, they wouldn't believe you. For a man to be a mage, he needs a third component as well. He must be able to absorb magic from sunlight or fire so that he can refill his Glory Virden again and again. Most of us absorb light through the eyes, but some do it through the skin. That is why we think Friaku's Garathi go into battle naked, not to intimidate their foes, but to give themselves access to as much magic as possible.
So, what's that got to do with me?
Young man, you can absorb magic either through your eyes like a magus or through your skin. Your skin is practically glowing with it. I'd guess you would have a natural bent toward body magics. And your Glory Virden, I've never seen one like it. You could use magic for half the night and not empty it. It's perfect for a wet boy. But I'm sorry. Your conduit.
What? It's blocked? Is it bad?
You have no conduit.
Will you fix it? Money's no object.
It's not a matter of drilling a hole. It's more like making new lungs. This is not something any healer in the Chantry has ever seen, much less tried to fix. And with a talent of your talent's magnitude, my guess is that the attempt would be lethal to you and the healer both. Do you know any magi who would risk their life for you?
Carlo shook his head.
Then I'm sorry.
Could the Gandians help me? They have the best healers, don't they?
I'm going to choose not to take offense at that, though most sisters would. I've heard wild stories from the men's green school. Not that I believe it, but I heard of a magus who saved a dying woman's unborn child by putting it in her sister's womb. Even if that's true, that's dealing with pregnancy, and we healers work with difficult pregnancies all the time. What you've got, we never see. People come to us because they're sick. They bring their children to the Chantry or one of the men's schools because they've set a barn on fire or healed a playmate or thrown a chair at someone's head using only their minds. People like you don't come to us. They just feel frustrated by life. Like they're supposed to be something more than they are, but they can never break through.
Thanks.
Sorry.
So, that's it? There's nothing for me?
I'm sure the ancients could have helped you. Maybe there's some forgotten old manuscript in a Gandhian library that could help. Or maybe there's someone at the Chantry who's studying talent disorders and I simply don't know about it. I don't know. You could try. But if I were you, I wouldn't throw my life away looking for something you're never going to find. Make your peace with it.
This time, Kylo didn't have to try. The Durzo blint glare came to his eyes, no problem. Kylo walked onto the sands of the stadium ready to hurt someone. The stands were full to overflowing. Kylo had never seen so many people. Vendors walked the aisles hawking rice, fish, and skins of ale. Noblemen and women had servants fanning them in the rising heat, and the king sat on a throne drinking and laughing with his retinue. Kyler thought he even spied a sour-faced Lord General Agon to one side. The crowd buzzed at the sight of Kage. Then, the gate opened opposite him, and a big peasant stepped in. No one really cared who won. They were just happy that another fight was about to start. The big peasant drew a big rusty bastard sword. Kyler drew his own blade and waited. The peasant charged Kyler and lifted his blade for an overhead chop. Kyler jumped in, jabbed his blade hard into the man's stomach. Then, as the peasant tripped past, Kyler slashed his kidney and hamstring. The sword glowed yellow-orange-red. Everyone seemed taken off guard, except for the blade masters, sitting in a special section in their red and iron-gray cloaks. Most of the audience seemed more startled than anything. Kyler sheathed his sword and walked back into the fighters. He waited alone, sitting still, not talking to anyone. Just before his next turn, a huge basher with a tattoo of a lightning bolt on his forehead sat next to him. Kyler thought his name was Bernard.
You've got 9 fans out there who'd love it if you make a bit of a show next time.
Kyler's second opponent was Yamuri. The horse lords didn't often come to the city, so the audience was excited. He was a small man covered with layers of brown horse hide, even his face masked behind leather. He, too, had kept the knives at his belt, big, forward-curving Gurkhas. His blade was a scimitar, excellent for slashing from horseback, but not as good for a sword fight. Further, the Yamuri was drunk. As ordered, Kyler played with him, dodging heavy slashes at the last moment, mixing in spin kicks and acrobatics, basically violating everything Durzo had taught him.
Against a competent opponent, you never aim a kick higher than your opponent's knee. It's simply too slow. And you don't leave your feet. Jumping commits you to a trajectory you can't change. The only time to use a flying kick was what the Currens had developed it for. To unseat cavalry when you yourself were on foot and had no other option.
Kyler quickly brought the fight to an end. As Kyler came in from his fight, he saw Logan going out. Logan's opponent was either Bernard or Lefty. Kyler hoped the twin wouldn't be too hard on him. A few minutes later, though, Logan came in, flushed and triumphant. Bernard, or Lefty, must have gotten overconfident. Kyler's third fight was against a local swordmaster who made his living tutoring young noblemen. The man looked at Kyler as if he were the vilest snake in Mid-Kiru, but he was overeager in his riposts.
Damn it all to hell!
After scoring a single touch on Kyler, he lost and stormed off. It was only when Logan won his third fight against another swordmaster that Kyler smelled a rat. Then Kyler won his fourth fight against a veteran soldier. Oddly enough, a low-ranking one and not from a good family, but against whom Kyler should have had a tough match. The soldier wasn't a good pretender. Kyler almost didn't attack the openings the man left. They were so blatant that Kyler was sure they were traps. Then he understood. The peasant had been real. The Yamuri had been drugged. The swordmaster had been intimidated. The soldier had been bought. It was a single elimination tourney, so now there were only 16 men left. Kyler recognized 4 of them as Sakage, which meant there were probably another 4 Sakage he didn't recognize. The 9 had stacked the brackets. It infuriated him, but he sailed through his last fights as if they mattered, doing jumping spin kicks, arm bars, leg sweeps, elaborate disarming combos, and everything else ridiculous he could think of. He thought that the 9 believed in him, that they were giving him a real chance, do or die. But this was just another scam. There were great fighters here, but they'd been bought off. No doubt the bookies were making money hand over fist as Kyler rose through one bracket and none other than Logan Geyer rose through the other. Logan, tall, handsome Logan, the sign of a leading family, was hugely popular. So Logan's first fights had been staged to be very close, so that Sakage could depress the odds against him. Then Logan had sailed through the more recent rounds. Great fighters took their dives at unlikely times, padding the Sakage coffers further. In most cases, it was done convincingly. When a semi-competent swordsman was trying to stab you, it didn't take much presence to miss a block. But Kyla could tell. And he could tell that the Blade Masters could tell. They looked furious, and Kyla imagined it would be a long time before they could be convinced to hold a tourney in Sonaria again. The process must be so obviously corrupt to them that Kyla doubted they would grant him Blade Master status, even if he earned it twice over. Just as obvious was that the king couldn't tell. At least, not until one of the Blade Masters went over and talked to him. Elaine jumped to his feet, and it took his counselors some time before they could calm him enough to make him sit. So the Nine had made their point with the king. But there was still money to be made. And if Kyla guessed correctly, the Nine wanted to make their point with the whole city. Kyla was disgusted as he walked out onto the sand to face Logan. It was the last fight. This was for the championship. There was no good way out. He had half a mind to toss his sword at Logan's feet and surrender, but the king would think that the Sakage was declaring its support for Logan. Then it would only be so long before he hired a wet boy to go visit the Geyer estate, or a simple assassin if the Sakage wouldn't take the job. Nor could Kyla let him win after a close fight. Now that the king knew the Sakage had stacked the whole event, he would think they were trying to make Logan look good. So what was Kyla supposed to do? Humiliate his best friend? The earlier elation had faded completely from Logan's face. He was dressed in fine, light chainmail with black links in the shape of a Geyer falcon on front and back, and the crowd roared as the two came together. But neither of the young men paid the crowd any attention.
I'm not good enough to make it this far. You've set me up. I've been trying to decide what to do about it. I was thinking of throwing my sword down and capitulating to spoil it for you. But you're a Sakage, and I'm a Geyer. I'll never surrender to darkness and corruption. So what's it gonna be? Do you have another blade hidden that isn't warded? You gonna kill me publicly just to remind Sonaria whose boot is on her throat?
I'm just a sword.
Oh, a sword? You can't excuse what you are so easily. You're a man who's betrayed every part of his better nature. Who at every junction has decided to walk deeper into the darkness. And for what? Money? Kill me if that's what you've been paid for, Shadow, because I tell you this, I will do my best to kill you.
Logan began to draw his sword, but Kyla didn't bother. He launched himself forward with a lunging kick at Logan's sword hand. The kick smacked the hilt from Logan's fingers and twisted him to the side. Kyla ran into Logan. Kyla grabbed each of Logan's arms and yanked them up behind his back, trapping them in one hand. Kyla grabbed a fistful of Logan's hair with the other hand and slammed his face into the sand as hard as he could. Again and again. Then Kyla stood and drew his sword. Kyla slashed viciously across Logan's left kidney and then his right. The sword was warded, so it didn't cut, of course, but it was still like getting smacked with a cudgel. Kyla lofted his glowing orange sword to the crowd. Then he spun and smashed the flat of the blade into the back of Logan's head. Humiliating Logan had been the only way to save him, but humiliation, served in such a dishonorable manner, would not draw attention to Logan's defeat, but instead to the Sakage. They were vile and shameless and omnipotent, and today Kyler was their avatar. He tossed the red sword down and raised his hands to the crowd once more, this time in dual one-fingered salutes.
You! To hell with me!
The Modaini Smoking Club's windows were plangen plate glass cut into wedges and fanciful zoomorphic shapes. If you looked at the shapes in the glass, you could ignore the outside world completely, which was the point. If you looked at the shapes, you wouldn't notice the bars on the other side of the window. Kyla stood at that window, staring through those bars at a girl down in the Sideland Market. She was bargaining with a vendor for produce. Doll girl, Aline, was growing up. Perhaps 15 years old now that Kyla was 18. She was beautiful, at least from this safe distance. From here he could see her body, supple curves clad in a simple serving dress, her hair pulled back and shining gold in the sun, and the flash of an easy smile. Though he couldn't make out her scars from this distance, through the colored glass her white dress was blood red. The leaded zoomorphic whorls reminded him of the whorls of her scars.
She'll destroy you. She's part of a different world from any you'll ever know.
I know.
Kyla barely glanced over his shoulder. Mama Kay had come into the room with a new girl, an East Side girl, young and pretty. Mama Kay was combing the girl's blonde hair out. The Modaini Smoking Club was very different from most of the brothels in the city. The courtesans here were trained in the arts of conversation and music as much as the arts of the bedchamber. There was no scandalous dress, no nudity, no groping in the public areas, and no commoners allowed. Mama Kay had found out about Kyler's excursions long ago, of course. You couldn't keep anything secret from Mama Kay. She'd argued with him about it, and still made her comments whenever she happened to be here, but once she'd found out that he wouldn't stop coming, she'd made him swear that he'd come into the smoking club and watch from inside.
If you're going to be stupid, you might as well be safe.
If Kyla went outside, sooner or later, he'd bump into the girl and talk to her and bed her and fall in love with her and get himself killed for his defiance.
Don't be shy,
Mama Kay spoke to the girl.
You're soon going to be doing a lot more while a man's in the room than changing your clothes.
Kyla didn't turn as he heard the sounds of clothes being shed. Just what he needed. He was depressed already.
I know it's scary your first time, Daedra. It's a hard business. Isn't that right, Kyler?
It'd better be. It doesn't do much when it's soft.
Kyler didn't turn from the barred window. He was soaking his eyes in Aline. What would her clear brown eyes say as she looked at the girl behind him, preparing for her first client?
You're going to feel guilty at first, Daedra. Expect it. Ignore it. You're not a slut. You're not a liar. You're an entertainer. Men don't buy a fine Sethi wine because they're thirsty. They buy it because it makes them feel good. And buying it makes them feel good about themselves. That's why they come here, too. Men will always pay for their vices, whether it's wine or lifting your skirt.
Or murder.
Kyla could almost feel a chill in the air, but Mama Kay ignored him and continued on.
The secret is to decide what you won't sell. Never sell your heart. Some girls won't kiss. Some won't be kept by one man. Some won't perform certain services. I did it all, but I kept my heart.
Did you? Really?
Kyla turned, and his heart jumped into his throat. Through Mama Kay's art, Daedra now looked identical to Aline. Similar build, similar glorious curves, the same gleaming gold hair, the same simple servant's dress, similar to everything, but that she was on this side of the bars, close enough to touch, and Aline was out there. Daedra had an uncertain smile, but she couldn't believe how he was talking to Mama Kay. Mama Kay was furious. She swept across the room and grabbed Kyler's ear like he was a naughty little boy. She hauled him out of the room by his ear into the second-story landing. It was full of overstuffed chairs and fine rugs with a bodyguard sitting in one corner and doors leading to four different courtesans' rooms. Stairs led down to a parlor lined with suggestive but not explicit paintings and leather-bound books. Mama Kay finally released his ear and closed the door behind her.
Damn you, Kyler! Daedra is terrified already. What in the hell are you doing?
Telling an ugly truth. Telling lies. Whatever.
If I wanted truth, I'd look in the goddamn mirror. This life isn't about truth. It's about making the best of what you've got. This is about that girl, isn't it? That's madness. You saved her, Kyler. Now let her go. She owes you everything.
She owes me her scars.
Oh, you're a damned fool. Have you ever looked at what happened to all the other girls in your guild? Not even 10 years out, and they're drunks and riot weed smokers, cut purses and cripples, beggars and cheap whores, 15-year-old mothers with starving children, or unable to bear children at all because they've used Tansy tea so many times. I promise you, Aline's not the only girl from your guild with scars given to her by some twist. But she is the only one with a hope and a future. You gave her that, Kyler.
I should have...
The only thing you could have done better was murder that boy earlier, before he did anything to you. If you'd been the kind of child capable of murder, you wouldn't have been the kind of boy who cared what happened to some little girl. The truth is that even if they were your fault, Aileen's scars are a small price for the life you've given her.
Kyler turned away. The landing had a window overlooking the market, too. It was simple glass, clear, neither cut nor colored like the glass in the courtesan's room. It, too, was barred, though with simple straight iron, the bar's edges as sharp as one of Blint's knives. Aline had come closer, and he could see her scars, but then she smiled, and her scars seemed to disappear. How often did girls in the Warren smile like that? Kyla found himself smiling in response. He felt lighter than he could ever remember. He turned and smiled at Mama Kay.
I wouldn't have expected to find absolution from you.
It's not absolution. It's reality. And I'm the perfect person to give you that. Besides, you carry guilt as badly as Durzo.
Durzo? Durzo never feels guilty about anything.
A flicker of disgust passed over Mama Kay's face. She turned to look at Aline.
End this farce, Kyler.
What are you talking about?
Durzo told you the rules. You can fuck, but you can never love. He doesn't see what you're doing, but I do. You believe you love Aline, so you won't fuck at all. Now, why don't you get this out of your system? Kyler, you can't have that girl out there. So why don't you just take what you can have? Go into Daedra. She'll thank you for it. It's on the house. If you're worried because you're inexperienced, she's a virgin too.
No thanks. I'm not interested.
Kyler, what are you waiting for? Some glorious soul union with that girl out there? It's just fucking. That's all you get. That's the deal, Kyler. And you knew it when you started. We all make our deals. I did. Durzo did. And you did, too.
Giving up, Mama Kay gestured to one of her bashers downstairs to let a client through. A hairy-knuckled slob wheezed his way up the stairs. Though richly dressed, he was fat and ugly and foul-smelling and grinning broadly with black teeth. He paused on the landing, licking his lips, a slack-jawed picture of lust. He nodded to Mama Kay, winked conspiratorially at Kyler, and went into the virgin courtesan's room.
Maybe they were bad deals.
It doesn't matter. There's no going back.
Firkuset stood before a door high inside the great pyramid of Shokendi. When he and Dorian and Solon had been students at the Magi School of Fire, they hadn't rated such prestigious rooms. But he and Dorian hadn't been given the rooms now so much to thank them for their historic services as to keep an eye on them. Dorian's eye appeared on the other side. Fear always thought it was funny. Dorian was a prophet. He could foretell the fall of a kingdom or the winner of a horse race. A lucrative trick when Fear could convince him to do it. But he couldn't tell who was at his own door. He said the prophesying concerning himself involved spiraling uncomfortably close to madness.
Come, come.
Fear felt himself passing through an improbably high number of wards. He looked at them. A ward against eavesdropping, he'd expected. A ward against entry was unusual to maintain when you were in the room yourself. But the truly strange one was a ward to keep magic in. Fear fingered the threads of the weave, shaking his head in astonishment. Dorian was the kind of magus born once a generation. After studying at Hoth Salar, the healer's school in Gandu, and mastering all they had to teach him by the time he was 16, Dorian had come to the School of Fire and mastered fire magics while not even pretending to be interested in them. He'd only stayed because he'd become friends with Fear and Solon. Solon's talents were almost solely in fire, but he was the strongest of the three. Fear wasn't sure why the two had become friends with him. Maybe because he wasn't threatened by their excellence. They were so obviously the kind of men who'd been touched by the gods that Fear didn't even think to be jealous for a long time. Maybe it helped that he'd been born a peasant. It probably also helped that whenever he was struggling with his studies and started to be jealous, one or the other of his friends would suggest sparring with him. Fear looked fat, but he could move, and he trained daily with the Blade Masters who kept their central training facility mere minutes from Shokendi. For Solon and Dorian to volunteer to spar with him was to volunteer for bruises. Dorian could heal bruises later, but they still hurt. Dorian had half-packed saddlebags open on the bed.
You know the Assembly's forbidden you to leave. They don't care about Cenaria. Honestly, if Solon weren't there, I wouldn't either. We could send him a message to leave.
The school's leaders hadn't phrased it that way, of course. They were more worried about delivering the contents of Midkiru's only, perhaps the world's only, prophet into the God King's hands.
You don't even know the best part yet.
Fear felt the blood draining from his face. The wards to keep magic in the room suddenly made sense.
You aren't planning to steal it.
I could make the argument that it's ours. The three of us were the ones who tracked it, found it, and brought it back. They stole it from us first, Fear.
You agreed it would be safer here. We let them take it from us.
So I'm taking it back.
So it's you against all the world again.
It's me for all the world, Fear. Will you come with me?
Come with you? Is this the madness?
When Dorian's gift for prophecy had surfaced, one of the first things he'd tried was to tell his own future. He'd learned that no matter what he did, he would go mad one day.
Delving into my own future would only hasten that day's arrival.
I thought you said you still had a decade or so.
Not so long now.
Dorian shrugged like it didn't matter, as if it didn't break his heart, exactly the way he'd shrugged when he asked Solon to go to Cenaria, knowing it would cost Solon Cady's love.
Before you answer, Fear, know this. If you come with me, you will regret it many times. You will never again walk the halls of Shokendi.
You make such a convincing plea.
You will also save my life at least twice. Own a forge. Be known throughout the world as the greatest living weaponsmith. Have a small part in saving the world and die satisfied. If not nearly so old as you or I had hoped.
Oh, well, that's better.
Dorian rarely told what he knew, but when he did, he never lied.
Just a small part in saving the world.
Fear, your purpose in life isn't your happiness. We're part of a much bigger story. Everyone is. If your part is unsung, does that make it worthless? Our purpose on this trip isn't to save Solon. It's to see a boy. We will face many dangers to get us there. Death is a very real possibility. And do you know what that boy needs from us? Three words. Maybe two, if the name counts as only one. Do you want to know what they are?
Sure.
Ask Mama Kay.
That's it. What's it mean?
I have no idea.
Sometimes a seer could be a pain in the ass.
You ask for a lot from me.
Dorian nodded.
I'll regret it if I say yes.
Many times, but not in the end.
It might be easier if you told me less.
Believe me, I wish I didn't have such a clear view of what lies before you down each possible choice here. If I told you less, you would hate me for holding back. If I told you more, you might not have the heart to carry on.
Enough! Gods, was it going to be that bad?
Fear looked at his hands. He'd have a forge. He'd be known throughout the world for his work. It had been one of his dreams. Maybe he could even marry, have sons. He thought of asking Dorian, but didn't dare. He rubbed his temples.
Good. Now, help me figure out how we're going to get Kurak out of here.
Fear was sure he had misunderstood. Then he felt the blood draining from his face. There were wards on the door to keep magic in.
When you say here, you mean here in the school? Like I still have a chance to convince you not to try to steal the most guarded artifact in Mid-Kiru, right?
Dorian threw back the covers on the bed. There was a plain sheathed sword on it. It looked entirely normal, except that the sheath was made entirely of lead, and it covered the sword entirely, even the hilt, damping the magic. But this wasn't just a magic sword. It was more like the magic sword. This was Kurak, Emperor Jorsen Alkesti's sword, the sword of power. Most Magi weren't even strong enough to use it. If Fear, or most others, tried, it would kill them in a second. Dorian had said even Solon couldn't use it safely. But after Jorsen Alkesti's death, there had been quite a few Magi who had been able to, and they destroyed more than one civilization.
At first, I thought I was going to have to prophesy my own future to get it. But instead, I prophesied the guards. Everything worked perfectly, except one guard came down a hallway that he only had maybe a 1 in 1,000 chance of taking. I had to knock him out. The good news is, he's going to be nursed back to health by a lovely girl, whom he'll later marry.
You're telling me there's some guard unconscious upstairs right now, just waiting to be found, while we're talking. Why are you even doing this?
Because he needs it.
He? You're stealing Korok for? Ask Mama Kay, boy.
Oh no, well, not directly. The boy who needs to hold Korok, the one the whole world needs to hold Korok, isn't even born yet. But this is our only chance to take it.
Gods, you're serious.
Stop pretending this changes anything. You've already decided. We're going to Cenaria.
Sometimes a seer could be a pain in the ass. Try always.